what I would call the traditional operations research methods, like optimization, simulation, that kind of thing. While now there's hardly any research project that we do that it doesn't at least have a data science dimension to it, that doesn't even consider using what we now call machine learning methods to at least help solve the problem.
Welcome to More Intelligent Tomorrow, a podcast about our emerging AI-driven world. Critical conversations about tomorrow's technology, today. 3, 2, 1, go! On today's episode, host Ben Taylor sits down with Dr. Matthias Winkenbach, director of the MIT Megacity Logistics Lab and a research associate at the MIT Center for Transportation and Logistics.
Matthias, I'm excited to talk to you. And I would say Guten Tag, but I guess it's Guten Abend where you are. What time is it there?
Right now it is Guten Abend, yeah. But yeah, thanks for having me.
Joining us late. So to set the stage for the topic that we're going to dive into, I'd love for you to describe to the audience what the last mile means to you.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you get different answers from different people depending on who you ask what they consider to be the last mile. We typically refer to it as really the last stretch from, let's say, the last fulfillment facility or the last facility within a larger supply chain at which an item or a shipment is being touched before it actually gets sent out to the final customer, be that a business customer, be that a consumer, be the point of consumption like a restaurant, but that last leg of transportation basically from the major facility to who actually uses or receives the item, that's what we consider the last mile.
And what is the cost ratio? That surprised me doing research for this session. How much does the last mile cost compared to the full supply chain pipeline? What percent?
Yeah, that's actually, glad you asked that, because some people underestimate the true cost of last mile logistics. It obviously depends a little bit on the industry, but in most industries that I know of, the last mile, even though it's kind of the shortest final leg of the typically global supply chain, it is the largest contributor to overall supply chain cost. For instance, in the fashion supply chain, a good ballpark estimate would be around 40% of total supply chain cost would actually be related to last mile. So that's why, even though it seems such a tiny part of the global supply chain, companies put a lot of effort in optimizing the heck out of it.
And is that fraction increasing? Because I noticed during COVID, we now have grocery delivery. We have a lot of things that were not being delivered before. A lot of food and meals are being delivered now.
The question of the effect of COVID is probably not that easy to answer, because I would figure that COVID raised supply chain costs on all sorts of levels. But in general, I would say that last mile logistics costs have been increasing relative to the remaining supply chain costs, simply because at least for many products, for many types of shipments, customers are expecting faster delivery lead times, more flexible delivery. And all of that adds to the complexity of last mile logistics, which at the end of the day results in cost.
We talk a lot about intelligence on this podcast and how humans, we're very intelligent compared to other animals because we can actually intentionally delay gratification. We can plan for the future. But I feel like with some of this stuff, same day delivery, one day delivery, are we going backwards? What are your thoughts on whether or not we should be doing this? Should humans have same day delivery? Is there a negative cost from a global economy or from an environmental perspective when it comes to sustainability?
Yes and no. So obviously things like same day delivery or even faster service speeds, like pretty much on demand delivery, are on the rise. And obviously that leads to additional costs, that leads to less ability of companies to consolidate deliveries, for instance. And therefore, it typically increases the amount of transportation needed. So basically, the number of miles driven per package delivered. The faster you have to move things, the less time you have to consolidate, the more individualized your shipments become. So it seems like at least at first sight, the net effect of this on sustainability, be it emissions or congestion or whatever you want to measure sustainability by, is negative. But at the same time, what we observe in our research is that due to this increased speed and flexibility, companies also need to adjust their overarching network structure. So basically, where to fulfill things from. When we were in the times of next day, 2 day, 5 day delivery, fulfillment typically happened, at least in the e-commerce space, from some really big fulfillment center somewhere in the middle of nowhere outside of a city, far outside of a city quite frequently. So the only way to actually get stuff into cities from there would be large, typically combustion engine vehicles. Now that we're looking at things like same day delivery or instant delivery, stuff already needs to reside closer to the consumer before it even gets ordered. So you're thinking of, or we are working with many of our research partners on more decentralized network structures with smaller satellite facilities in between the big inventory holding facility, like the big fulfillment center outside of the city, and the customer. And these satellite facilities are already typically within the boundaries of the city, close to the customer. And the interesting thing about this is it enables a different choice of modes. So we can use more ecologically friendly vehicles for the actual final mile because these facilities are closer. You don't have to travel that far. And so typically smaller and electrified vehicles, for instance, become more attractive.
That makes sense. So you're saying with these satellite centers where we can begin to store material closer to the site, then it opens up more possibilities, potentially a drone or other future capabilities that are more, they're electric or they're more friendly than a combustion engine.
Yeah, exactly. So we've, for instance, worked with companies in the fashion retail industry or like beverage industry who are facing the same challenges from their customers as, let's say, the typical e-commerce platforms that we all know of are facing them. Namely that customers want things faster, more ad hoc, more on demand. And the only way to basically satisfy this growing need is to have everything already close enough to the consumer. The big challenge here, obviously, is you're adding complexity. It's much more complex to, for instance, manage inventory or manage transportation even across a network of, let's say, 10 decentralized satellite facilities that, let's say, serve the New York City market compared to serving that same market for one or at most two really big fulfillment centers somewhere outside of New York City. Even the complexity of the underlying planning and optimization problems grows exponentially, basically, because you're suddenly fragmenting inventory or fragmenting transportation, and you have to make these planning decisions at a much higher level of granularity, basically.
It's a very complicated problem. And I think you've talked to this, how it doesn't get boring. It's constantly evolving. How much has it changed in the last decade as you've looked into it and you've studied this?
When I was doing my PhD on this topic, basically, we were still living in a slightly different world. So I was actually working with the French postal operator back then on kind of their first considerations of a decentralized network for more efficient parcel delivery back then. And now pretty much every discussion that we have with companies all over the world across all parcel industries are evolving around that same idea of becoming more local, like moving towards hyper-local fulfillment, changing their underlying network structures, changing the way we are routing vehicles based on this new network topology, changing the way we think about new vehicle technology, but also honestly changing the way we think about data and methods. Because let's say 10 years ago in our discipline, people were predominantly occupied with what I would call the traditional operations research methods, like optimization, simulation, that kind of thing. While now there's hardly any research project that we do that it doesn't at least have a data science dimension to it, that doesn't even consider using what we now call machine learning methods to at least help solve the problem. Not saying that operations research is completely being replaced by data science, but the two go hand in hand and actually complement each other quite well.
And when you're talking about parcel efficiency, I think the thing that most people think about in our space is they immediately think of the traveling salesman problem. And how do you think about parcel efficiency? Because I imagine there's a theoretical limit that we can never obtain because of changes in the state, right? Like changes in traffic. There's things that are happening during the day before you set your route. So how do you think about parcel efficiency or route efficiency?
Technically, there's obviously a theoretical optimal solution to the traveling salesman problem or whatever the underlying routing problem is if you want to reach a certain set of customers on a given day. But reality always deviates from that for various reasons. As you said, there's uncertainty related to traffic, to availability of customers, availability of parking, and even like the mood of the driver may have an influence on what actually happens on the ground. Let's say in practice, we will probably never reach a point where we can 100% execute on the truly optimal solution to a routing problem, because of all these uncertainties, and because they unfold, as you said, throughout the day as the route is already ongoing. So that's actually one good example for where data science methods help us complement traditional planning methods, so optimization-based methods. Because at the end of the day, for many real-world applications, it's actually not that important to find the theoretical optimal solution to the TSP, but rather to find a good solution that is close enough to the real complexity of the operational environment such that the driver can actually execute on the route plan as closely as possible. So that's probably a little bit abstract, but to make this more tangible, think of a last mile delivery driver who probably delivers to the same neighborhood, the same kind of route territory every single day. And over time, you collect a lot of historical data on the route sequence that he actually followed and the times that he actually spent serving different customers along the route. And they are most likely different from your assumptions that you used when you were theoretically solving the traveling salesman problem. Now, you can actually use data science methods to extract the tacit knowledge of the driver about traffic conditions, about customer-specific requirements, because the driver typically knows at what time of the day a certain part of the city is particularly congested, or a driver typically knows where he can find parking easily at what time of the day, or when a certain customer might be available or not available. And that kind of knowledge of the driver is extremely hard to encode in a pure optimization model that solves the TSP. So instead, what you're trying to do is you're trying to observe the historical performance of the driver, learn from that, basically learn from where he or she actually deviated from what would be the theoretically optimal sequence to serve the customers. And because he or she probably does that for a reason, you can learn from that and recalibrate your planning model, so your traveling salesman problem optimization tool, to basically find a better solution next time. And that solution is not necessarily better in the sense of shorter or faster or more efficient in terms of, let's say, miles per package, but it is more executable. It's closer to the reality faced by the driver on a day-to-day basis.
That's really interesting, because I imagine if I was a driver and you're trying to interview me, some of these insights might be difficult because it's my intuition. It's my, I do this for a reason, but you have all the data. You have the GPS tracking. You know what I'm doing. So you have my behavior during the day.
And if you have a driver fleet of 10 people, individual interviews may be doable. But if you are dealing with a fleet of hundreds, it's no longer scalable. And also, it's a dynamically evolving problem, right? Traffic conditions may change as a function of weather or season or whatever. And that means you would have to repeat the interview process very frequently. And that gets annoying and also, again, not scalable. So having a data-driven method is a good kind of compromise between asking the driver directly and having a scalable approach to solving the problem.
That makes sense. And I think when people think about the future of extreme efficiency, that everyone goes to drones. And I've heard you say on previous interviews that you don't believe we will go to a drone-only delivery system, because I imagine that would be perfect efficiency, right? Every package has a drone and it's going the way the crow flies directly to the customer. So maybe explain why a drone-only delivery service probably isn't practical in the long term. What are your thoughts on that?
There's a variety of reasons, and I'm not actually an expert to speak on all of them. For instance, I know that there are many hurdles to still overcome just on the regulatory side to make individual customer deliveries by drone for commercial purposes a reality at a larger scale. I know there are pilots to do that already, but let's say serving a city like Boston entirely with drone-based package delivery, that's probably still a few years out just from the regulatory point of view. But more importantly, I don't think that this would be a reality that would even be desirable for several reasons. From a social perspective, I don't think it would be more desirable to have the thousands of drones buzzing around their head, replacing basically the relatively large fleet of delivery vehicles that we see on the roads today. Just think of the average UPS, FedEx, DHL truck out there. They carry 300-400 packages probably on one vehicle. That means you would have to replace that vehicle by 300-400 drone trips, for instance, and that's just one vehicle. So you can imagine how congested the sky would get at some point. And that's not desirable for the people living there, and it's not really easy to solve from a safety point of view. But also, honestly, from an economic point of view, it doesn't make sense. It's actually extremely hard to beat a well-consolidated route of an efficiently operated ground delivery vehicle. So our research actually suggests that the sweet spot might be twofold. One is you actually think of systems where the drone and the ground vehicle kind of collaborate on the delivery process, such that you basically outsource the really costly or the really difficult to reach customers to the drone, which may either operate separately from the vehicle or which may actually in the future take off from the vehicle and get back to the vehicle, but such that you basically still make use of the ability to consolidate of the big ground vehicle, but you basically free up the most constraining stops from the ground vehicle tour, give that to the drone, such that the ground vehicle tour actually becomes more efficient, even though the individual deliveries by drone are still relatively costly taken by themselves. Because you have to imagine that drone is also not necessarily cheap to operate. Even in a world where we're talking about full autonomy, the component cost and the lifespan of that drone make it relatively costly on a flight hour basis compared to a truck that runs for 15 years without a problem. And as long as you don't reach the full autonomy state, you actually need a highly educated person piloting this thing, or at least safety piloting this thing, which also makes it quite costly per hour and per package. And last but not least, ecologically speaking, I mean, lifting stuff in the air, moving it around and making sure it doesn't fall out of the sky is one of the most energy intensive ways of moving things from A to B. So unless you already control where the energy comes from, so you make sure that the drone is actually being charged with green electricity, if you wish, then the net benefit for instance, greenhouse gas emissions is also not that clear to me.
That makes a lot of sense. I hadn't thought about the aesthetics where people complain about power lines being above the ground and how they're ugly. And you're right, if you had thousands of drone flocks in the sky, I'm sure a lot of people would realize that wasn't a reality they enjoyed, whether it's the noise or even just the disrupted view.
It's noise, it's view, it's privacy, at least in some parts of the world that concerns people. It's safety, because if eventually one of these things falls out of the sky, that hurts.
Thinking about other parts of the world, what are the countries that are pushing the boundary? And what are the countries that still struggle with this? What is the global perspective on this problem?
The last mile challenge is obviously very different if you look at, let's say, a Western megacity like, let's say, New York City or Paris, compared to another megacity, let's say, in India, like Bangalore is a city that we worked on quite a bit, or large parts of Latin America are facing very different last mile challenges. So while I think North America, Europe, parts of China are seeing a highly technology driven approach to last mile logistics, where we, as we just discussed, where we talk about potentially using drones in the future, or maybe delivery robots, or some sort of autonomous vehicle technology, at least to again tweak the last mile and squeeze out cents and seconds and miles from last mile delivery routes. In parts of the emerging markets, we are still much more dealing with more fundamental problems, like how do we actually overcome safety concerns? How do we overcome extreme levels of congestion in certain during certain parts of the day? How do we respond to uncertainty related to weather? I'm not sure whether you've been to Sao Paulo, but for instance, we work quite a bit in Sao Paulo, and during certain times of the year, the weather might change from one minute to the other, and you might have a very heavy thunderstorm for half an hour that basically disrupts all your last mile operations completely. So there's different challenges depending on also the state of development of the market that we're looking at. So I wouldn't say that there's one country that does it particularly well and one that does it particularly poorly. It very much depends on the types of challenges that you're facing. For instance, New York City doesn't have many of the challenges that I just mentioned for Bangalore or Sao Paulo, but is dealing with the problem of unavailable curbside space to legally park a delivery vehicle and things like that. And so the challenges are very specific to individual cities rather than individual countries, I would say.
And you mentioned New York. One question I had, so we're thinking about deliveries. When I go to New York, I'm amazed that I don't see lines of garbage trucks. So how does a megacity get trash out of the city without, that just confuses me. I think for that many people living in that smaller region, there should be nonstop garbage exiting.
It's true. Honestly, I'm not an expert on garbage logistics, but my guess would be that the good thing about garbage is that it has, it's patient. It doesn't mind sitting there for a few more hours until you can actually pick it up during a time where there's not necessarily the rush hour happening at the same time. So in many cities that I know of, garbage collection, for instance, happens very early in the morning or during the night, when there's not, let's say, peak traffic for other purposes yet. So that is one big challenge that we are trying to overcome also for the delivery of goods, for instance. Can we actually decouple the inflow of goods into a city from other traffic conditions? So can we, for instance, deliver at night when everyone else is sleeping and certainly no one is commuting typically? Challenge obviously is, how do you do that because at night there's usually also nobody available to receive a shipment. So you have to come up with means of unattended delivery, which again is a technology question, but also a policy and regulation question that has to be solved. So there are a lot of initiatives thinking in that way, kind of decoupling freight mobility demand from people mobility demand.
And there's probably pressure from porch thieves as well to also have delivery that, if I'm not available at my porch right now because I'm on a podcast, right now, a porch thief can follow the delivery truck and go grab that delivery, and that happens pretty regularly. So I imagine there's other pressure to have delivery systems where people don't have to be present. They can just authenticate.
Yeah, and we all know, at least in the US and Europe, other places, we've seen how quickly we saw networks of, for instance, parcel lockers emerge from various vendors, which are a way of kind of, in this case, decoupling customer availability from the delivery process and being able to deliver safely, not to the porch, but at least to a place nearby the customer so that he or she can just come and pick up the package whenever they're available. And that's, again, a good example for a solution that is highly effective in a somewhat safe and well-developed environment like many parts of the US, Europe, and other places, but which would probably not be very successful in other parts of the world that, for instance, have severe crime and safety issues. So, for instance, putting up a smart locker in certain parts of Sao Paulo is a pretty bad idea because that locker would be gone very soon. And so this is not a solution that works for them. For instance, unattended delivery might be more effective in collaboration with, for instance, convenience stores, which are staffed 24/7, so there's always someone there to make sure the safety isn't an issue. So different environments require different solutions.
Yeah, I can't imagine porch delivery would work very well in downtown San Francisco. No! So there's a lot of excitement around self-driving trucks impacting supply chain. I think, was it Anheuser-Busch, or there was a beer company in Colorado that delivered one of the first warehouse-to-warehouse deliveries using a fully autonomous truck. Is this something that you think will offer big efficiencies to the supply chain problem. Where are we going to get the biggest efficiency gains before the last mile?
Yeah, so with regards to autonomous vehicles or trucks, again, on the last mile itself, I'm a little bit skeptical for several reasons, because last mile operations, especially in cities, are probably the most complex environment to ever operate an autonomous vehicle in. So I would agree with you that at least the short to medium term potential is more on, let's call it the middle mile. So from, for instance, between two warehouses or between two fulfillment centers, because obviously here distances are longer, but still the operational environment, so the routes that these vehicles have to travel on are, at least to a large extent, much less complex than an urban road network. And I think this is also one of the main areas of efficiency improvement when it comes to kind of the stage before the last mile. So think of an e-commerce platform. I don't want to name companies here, but think of a big e-commerce platform, and you're ordering from them, and it's likely that you're ordering multiple things and not everything is available in the same fulfillment center. Now they have two choices. Either they send you two separate shipments from two separate fulfillment centers, which is costly and also environmentally questionable, or they find a way of basically transshipping inventory between one fulfillment center and the other so that they can actually send stuff to you in one consolidated delivery. Now, to make that transshipment between facilities more efficient and also more flexible, because it needs to happen not just once a day in the morning, but maybe more frequently throughout the day, doing that with traditional technology, with a big truck and a physical, like a human driver, is costly and slow and not very flexible. So that's where technology like maybe autonomous vehicles that might be smaller in footprint, but operate 24/7 at any time you need them, or even larger cargo drones. We were talking about drones earlier. Larger cargo drones making that connection between two facilities of the same e-commerce platform. Those types of technology could add the necessary flexibility to the supply chain, or in this case, to the distribution network, to allow the e-commerce platform to consolidate more orders, to have less split orders, and be able to serve their customers in a more cost-efficient and also in a more reliable way, and at the same time, save on emissions, which is becoming increasingly important. So long answer to a short question. I think that middle mile really is quite interesting for many of these, let's say, advanced technology solutions, be it autonomous vehicles or drones or the like, to be explored.
So one of the things that I think is really interesting is, I think for most people, if we were able to follow the full supply chain from birth to death, I think it'd be pretty depressing. So I've got a 9-year-old son, he orders a Nerf gun. And most likely that Nerf gun was built in China, went on a cargo ship, and if you look at the full cycle, and then once the gun breaks in 4 months, goes in the recycle bin, and then that ends up probably on a cargo ship going back similar to where it came from. And I'm curious, do you think we'll see a reality where there is no Nerf gun that has to travel around the world, where I can just 3D print that at home? Wouldn't that be the ideal thing for certain types of items and toys, that where 3D printing becomes much more common, where we don't need same day delivery for most of these items? Or do you think that is that too futuristic?
I mean, it is relatively futuristic, but it's an interesting thought. I'm not sure whether 3D printing would necessarily help us avoid shipping stuff around the world per se, because even if you're 3D printing that toy in the US, probably the raw material for the 3D printer would still be coming from China, and the broken toy would probably still go back to where it came from. But I think the 3D printing, and let's just call it 3D printing or additive manufacturing or however you want to call it, is probably a good way of actually reducing waste. Because if you think about the fashion industry, for instance, a lot of the waste that we see coming, like product waste, is coming from the fact that they have to early on customize products. If you get the latest running shoe, that size of shoe, that color of shoe that you really want was already produced in that way in China and then shipped over the ocean. And maybe they're lucky and you actually want to buy it, but quite frequently nobody wants to buy it. And then at the end of the season, it gets thrown away without ever having had any purposeful use. And that's where I think, well, I know that a couple of sports companies, fashion companies are actually experimenting with additive manufacturing as a way to late customize the products and basically to localize at least the final assembly of the product such that they only or more closely match demand with supply. So they only produce what the customer really already said he or she would buy. And that would hopefully help us reduce quite a lot of waste. And fashion is just one example. I think there's many other examples that work in a similar way. And another big potential of additive manufacturing might indeed be the recycling of raw materials. I know that a few years ago, Adidas, for instance, had a first concept presented where they've built the first running shoe that was entirely made out of additive manufacturing materials. So they basically, quote unquote, 3D printed the shoe. And that material was also designed in such a way that you could recycle a large part of it and basically 3D print the next shoe out of 45, 50, 60%, I don't know, of the shoe you were wearing before, simply speaking. So I think that's a great idea to have that new way of localizing final manufacturing of certain products and at the same time engineering the materials of certain products such that they can be recycled and can be reused in additive manufacturing settings more than just once or twice or three times, but several cycles.
That's amazing to imagine that you could recycle a shoe. But also I really like the point you're making before that fashion is very complicated because it's not just about the size, it's about the look as well. And so if you can customize some of the look and the color later in the stage, then you're not going to overproduce because it's impossible to anticipate all demand. So Matthias, I have a darker sense of humor sometimes, and so prepare yourself. So I was laughing, thinking about, well, maybe in the future we won't need any supply chain or it'll be very minimal because we'll just be in the metaverse or VR and you'll just need your Soylent delivered. And so you don't need to have a puppy. You don't need to have this Nerf gun because you'll just have it in the metaverse. Do you think we'll ever get there? Or do you think we'll always need to see the sun and get outside?
I sincerely hope not. Maybe I'm already too old for this, but I still hope that most people get joy and happiness out of living in the real world and consuming real products, however harmful that might be to the planet. But I'm not sure whether the metaverse is any less harmful. So
maybe the line in the sand to be crossed is in the future, if I reach out to you and say, hey, instead of going to Iceland and doing a motorcycle trip with my friends, I just did it in the metaverse. And as soon as people start doing instead, then that'll be going down that slippery slope where I think you and I would agree that, no, you should go to Iceland and you should go on the motorcycle tour, or you should go to Hawaii and you should go scuba diving. You should not discount that just because you can. So it's an interesting thing to think.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. Obviously, you would think, well, not going to Iceland is probably good because you don't have to fly there and whatnot. I think a more likely scenario of something like, I don't know, the metaverse, or let's just call it augmented or virtual reality in general, a more likely scenario of that actually being helpful in streamlining supply chains and also reducing its environmental footprint, for instance, is changing the way we experience products and where we experience products. So think of buying furniture these days. I guess we all know the big blue furniture store with the yellow letters. And if you go there today, that basically means you have to take your car, drive for several miles outside of the city to go to the big box furniture store and experience the live product right there. And then you probably buy it and you have to somehow organize how to transport it back to your apartment and all that kind of stuff. And so there's a lot of effort, a lot of inconvenience to you as a consumer, but there's also a lot of transportation of individual items required of you going there, taking stuff back. So the environmental footprint of this entire process is not negligible. While in the future, you may actually save that trip. You may be able to go to a local little furniture showroom where you're still able to experience certain things physically, like the garment of your sofa or whatever. But you actually use augmented reality or related technologies to understand, okay, in which different ways, colors, shapes and forms does this sofa actually come? And how does that fit into my living room? How can I combine this with other products for which you currently need to go to that big centralized facility? And now you can actually decentralize and provide the same experience to the customer in a little store or a little showroom 2 blocks down the road. So you save a lot of that travel of the customer, you make it more convenient to the customer, and you're able to consolidate and ideally make the delivery of the product that the customer chooses to buy more efficient, because it's not the individual customer taking a sofa home in a Sprinter van anymore, but you can actually then basically have scheduled delivery routes of consolidated trips where you serve multiple customers with the same vehicle. And that obviously reduces the miles driven and the emissions created per sofa in this case. So I think there are ways of using that type of virtualization of our world to some extent to reduce the carbon footprint of supply chains and the way we consume.
I really like this topic, the topic of changing buyer behavior. The other thought I had was you could also bring that into the home. So Amazon already has, I think on their app, you can do augmented reality. Some objects you can visualize it in your home. So you can imagine a scenario where you have augmented reality and you're walking through your home and furniture is being recommended and projected in the setting, almost like you have an interior digital interior designer that is constantly trying to redo your home from a furniture perspective or design perspective. But then you can visualize it right there. You don't even have to go to the brick and mortar shop. Another thought I had is, I feel like with Amazon going to same day delivery or some of these other logistic suppliers, is that going to be the death knell in brick and mortar? Because right now for me, if I have to decide, am I going to go to a particular brick and mortar shop, it's normally based on time that I need it today. I need it soon. And this year I had my first same day delivery where I ordered it at 3 p.m. and it was delivered that evening. So do you think brick and mortar stores will still be around with some of these efficiency gains?
Yeah, the interesting thing is, let's say for several years, people basically predicted that brick and mortar retail was going to die. And actually it's specifically services like same day and instant delivery that make me believe that brick and mortar has a strong future, but a different one than people thought it would. So to give you an example, we were talking about those satellite facilities before, right? That companies would use to actually fulfill same day or instant delivery orders from that they probably received online. So we're not going to be able, or I believe we're not going to be able to reverse the trend that more and more things are going to be bought online rather than physically. But the retail store, the brick and mortar retail store itself, is actually a strategic asset to enable faster, more flexible, more reliable delivery services for the online channel. So we will probably see that the nature of the retail store changes. The footprint of the retail store may no longer be primarily dedicated to walk-in customers actually buying things on the spot, but it will probably be turned into more of a showroom kind of an experience type of setting where people may go in, see a product, they may take it with them, but they may also just place an order for it to be delivered to their door a little later in the day. But then the remaining part of the retail store would actually serve as a local fulfillment or micro fulfillment hub, where there's a lot of inventory in the back that can be used to serve urgent orders that came in online, or that customers placed that were actually using the showroom part of the store. So I think we see that already for some retailers that it's happening. And I think that trend will continue, because to enable these delivery speeds, e-commerce platforms, retailers who want to offer them need to identify suitable real estate in prime urban locations. And typically, that's where the retail stores are today. They were built close to where people lived or where people worked. So they are in the locations that we need now, more for the logistics behind e-commerce delivery, but still basically can be used by the companies who own and operate them.
I'm very interested in extremes and in limits. And when you think of megacities, is there an upper limit? Is there a limit where we logistically, it's too complicated, we even the best systems break down? Or do you feel like people could continue to push the limit on megacities? What is the largest megacity? I don't know off the top of my head, but how big can we go? Could we have 100 million people in a city?
We can. I mean, technically, there is no limit to it. And especially if we look at megacities as they pop up left, right, and center in large parts of Asia, for instance, these are cities that aren't just, that didn't just historically grow this large, but these, in part at least, are cities that were planned from the beginning to be able to become this large. Because, let's say, many traditional cities, think of Mexico City and others, they have grown humongously large, but nobody, when Mexico City was founded, thought of it that way. So that's where many of the struggles come from, because, for instance, the transportation infrastructure, the road network was never meant to accommodate that many people. And that's why we typically say that the bigger the city becomes, the more dense it becomes, but the road network and other transportation infrastructure doesn't grow proportionally, and therefore becomes congested and hard to operate in. And for these historically grown cities, I would say there is some sort of natural limit to their growth, simply because you can't fit more people in the same space. And at some point, the transportation infrastructure would entirely collapse, at least theoretically. But if you're thinking about these more planned cities in China and other places, I don't really see a reason why 100 million or 250 people city wouldn't be at least thinkable, as long as the plan was initially to have it grow this big and you have the necessary transportation infrastructure in place to support this growth. Because that's where the reality currently limits most of the existing megacities from efficiently growing further.
How do we plan these megacities better compared to something that just grew out of nothing like Mexico City?
Yeah, most of it obviously relies to balancing the needs for both people and goods mobility. In most traditional cities that I know of, both of these needs are being met by pretty much the same infrastructure, namely roads. While in a well-planned megacity, I would say, why would you even plan for freight to go on roads? Because freight is plannable, kind of. You know pretty much exactly where freight needs to go. You don't know how much and when and whatnot, but you know pretty much exactly the possible destinations of where freight might want to go. So why wouldn't you, for instance, already establish an underground rail system for freight that, I don't know, has the ability to feed into every single apartment building or whatever to actually deliver to individual households while being at least predominantly underground and both invisible to the people and therefore making it nicer to live in the city, but also less congested or less disruptive to the remaining traffic flow of people that may happen above the ground.
That's fascinating, because normally when we think of underground transport, we think of the subway, but you're suggesting that you could even have some type of underground conveyor system where you have micro fulfillment centers at the skyscrapers that then distribute where it then the highways are less of a concern going into a megacity. That's really interesting.
Yeah, obviously it depends on geological conditions and whatnot. But generally speaking, if you have the money and if you have the ability to plan it from scratch, why wouldn't you plan with an underground system? Because also keep in mind, we were talking about autonomous vehicle technology before, and I was telling you that autonomous vehicles in a real world network with human drivers around is going to be difficult to accomplish. But if you have autonomous freight vehicles in an isolated system, like a tunnel system where there's no random interference, that is very much doable. So I think if one were planning to build an entirely new city, one should leverage that fact.
That's really interesting. I looking at, when you look online and you see the videos from the Amazon Fulfillment Centers, it's fascinating to see how quickly the packages flow through there. So you can imagine there are future, there are smart cities that are being built right now. I know they're in Saudi Arabia, they have NEOM that's being built where they are planning for the future. So you could imagine maybe a big supplier like Amazon could potentially build something like that sooner to demonstrate the feasibility or the possibility of servicing packages for 50 million.
Yeah. The challenge there is obviously if someone like Amazon or some other single vendor was establishing this, it would most likely be an infrastructure that would be closed, like useful for Amazon, but not for other vendors, for instance. And that's a challenge because as soon as you have a kind of a private infrastructure, that doesn't solve the overarching problem. So you would ideally have to have this infrastructure open to different vendors using it, which also requires, for instance, standardized containers and that kind of stuff. So it's not easy. But if you were doing something like this from scratch, you would have to think of it on a systems level, not on an individual vendor level.
That makes sense. Already, I think some people would argue that the, again, not to name names, but the power of some of these suppliers becomes significant because they begin to control airfare, trucks. There's a lot of innovation that comes that makes it difficult to compete. I guess the other thought is you have Elon Musk's the boring company concept where maybe we'll just have all of these tunnels under cities and in existing cities that are used for package delivery rather than just traffic. So what, from a technology perspective, what is the most challenging to you now? What are the technology aspects of this that push you the most when you think about the hurdles or the breakthroughs that we're running?
It depends a bit on what you define as being technology, but from a pure research lens, I look at the work that we currently do, let's say boundaries are not so much being pushed anymore on, let's say, finding more efficient algorithms to optimize a route. But boundaries are being pushed on finding new ways to make use of data, like I discussed before. Like how do we actually learn a route rather than optimize a route? How do we actually kind of learn from the living system on what solution, what route plan, what distribution strategy works in certain parts of a city and doesn't work in certain parts of the city? In theory or conceptually, it's easy to talk about this like we did before, but actually methodologically, it's far from trivial for various reasons. A, because at least in our field, many of, let's say, the applications of many machine learning methods haven't really been explored in depth or not deeply enough, at least. So there's, even in the academic literature, still somewhat of a lack of experience. But even on the data side, we think that today we are living in a bit world of abundant data availability and big data, or however you want to call it. But actually, if you think about the complexity of the problems that we're trying to solve, most of the times we still don't have enough data. So think of a problem that we discussed before, an e-commerce platform wanting to offer an on-demand delivery service. So you buy something now and you get it delivered within 60 minutes or something. What you actually need to be able to do to pull this off reliably and somewhat cost efficiently is predict demand, which sounds boring because we've been predicting demand for decades, but we've always been predicting demand, let's say, on a high level of aggregation, predicting demand for an entire region or an entire city or an entire day or an entire month. But what we now need to do is we need to predict demand, let's say, within the next 60 minutes at the spatial resolution of a block of a city or a zip code. And then your seemingly big data becomes relatively small if you think about how many observations you actually have to learn from. And it's not that many. Even for big companies who have years worth of data, it's not that many, or at least not enough to train the types of methods that are very powerful, but typically also very data hungry to become powerful. that's kind of in a nutshell some of the methodological barriers that we're pushing. So research technology, if you wish. And then thinking of technology as hardware, obviously the usual culprits are we ever going to be able to make advanced vehicle technologies like autonomous vehicles, drones, delivery robots, viable from a technological point of view, acceptable from a social and regulatory point of view, but most importantly, are we going to be able to make them economically viable? Because it's actually, as I said before, not that easy to match the cost of delivering a package with a big brown van by a human driver with an autonomous system. It's not that easy to beat that cost.
You make me think of a new category that I'd never thought of before, and that is this concept of, for the last mile, you're anticipating additional demand. So you're actually putting packages on the last mile truck that are not tied to a customer yet. And now you're dealing with a dynamic pricing problem. So ideally, so if something is in high demand, I think I'm going to sell it. But then in real time, I'm adjusting the price to ensure I sell it during the last mile, which is really interesting. It sounds very complicated, but it would be fascinating to have last mile trucks that are anticipating demand. And now when I order something, it's to my house in an hour, which would confuse me because I know the fulfillment center is an hour away. And that doesn't make any sense to me why I would get a package in an hour, but we would know it was anticipated demand in your area.
It's actually an interesting idea. We had a research project a couple of years ago where we thought, well, what if we actually didn't only have physical stores for, like, let's say, instant delivery services to hold the inventory? But what if we also inserted two or three big trucks into the city that would just keep moving and try to be close to where we expect demand to happen within the next hour or so, and then basically use them as a pop-up fulfillment center pretty much to serve those customers more instantaneously? It turned out to be more complicated than it sounded, and also harder to make work in a cost-efficient manner, as you can imagine, but it's probably a concept that we might be seeing in the future.
Maybe you just need to combine that with a gaming company. So I'll be playing Candy Crush or something. You'll say, you want some free eggs, and then eggs will be delivered to my house. But you'll be paid with advertising dollars. So I know Amazon has the famous patent on the blimp with the drones coming out. So you have a flying fulfillment center. Is this something that you think could be feasible, or does it depend on the location, where maybe in a rural setting that can make a lot of sense, but in an urban setting, or maybe I have the concept flipped where it'd make more sense in an urban setting?
Let's say I'm not sure whether it absolutely has to be a blimp, because that in itself is relatively advanced technology that comes with a lot of challenges and cost. But I guess the underlying idea isn't that stupid. So having a fulfillment facility that is not huge, so that can't store everything, but that may be able to store the most important or the most urgently needed items and basically fulfill these orders or fulfill these items on urgent order more flexibly because it's closer to where the demand might happen. So that might obviously be the blimp flying over Manhattan. But it could also just be a barge on the Hudson River, which is probably much easier to pull off from a technological point of view, but almost would serve the same purpose, because the important part is that it's mobile, that you can move it around to where you assume demand is going to happen within the next hour or two. And the reason why you just wouldn't put it in a physical facility in downtown Manhattan is probably cost and availability of such facilities. It's not that easy to find suitable real estate for such an operation. And if you do find it, it's probably extremely costly. So that's why you would probably be willing to put stuff in the air or on the sea or in some other shape or form. So the blimp concept itself, I have my doubts, also because it's very sensitive to weather and whatnot. So I think there's a lot of question marks around that. But the ability to have a mobile fulfillment facility is very valid in whichever form it might come.
With algorithms and with human behavior, especially on these social media apps, TikTok, Instagram, things like that, but also with Amazon and DoubleClick, we get a very good sense of people's personas online. when it comes to product recommendation, this is getting better and better. Do you think we will see a demand? I have seen this already. There are services out there that will deliver you a monthly surprise package, and it has goodies. It has things inside that they think you would like, mm-hmm. and they've got some process for you to return stuff. Do you think we could get to a future where part of logistics and delivery is anticipated demand, where I know you need a toothbrush on this cadence. I know you need these things, where there's a lot more planning, so I can discount the pricing, but you and I now get deliveries every Friday, and it's for things we did not ask for, but the algorithms are better and better at anticipating what we want.
Yeah, I think that's certainly part of what we're going to see in the near term future. In a way, we're already seeing it. You can already set up a recurring delivery schedule for certain pantry items and whatnot. I believe that, for instance, when it comes to grocery deliveries, something that also more and more people actually do online, order groceries online, it's relatively easy, I would say, for someone offering that type of service to learn from your consumption patterns, to kind of anticipate when you might be running out of milk, and therefore basically already triggering you to place an order early, such that A, they don't get the order when you actually urgently need it, but they have a little bit more of a lead time to plan for and to consolidate and to make this both more cost efficient for them, but also less disruptive in terms of the ecological footprint of this delivery operation. So I personally do see a future where you may kind of automatically get your grocery replenishment delivery, I don't know, every Friday afternoon after you return from home without even pushing a button. And maybe the only thing that you can still want to do is add items that you typically don't order but want to be included in this particular shipment, so that you at least make the bulk of those deliveries more plannable, more anticipatable, that's an English word, by the vendor, and therefore streamlining their logistics processes, not just on the last mile, but also inbound. So if they know what they have to ship out of the supermarket or wherever they ship it from on a Friday, they already know what needs to come in on a Thursday night, basically from somewhere out of the city. So I think there's a huge potential for streamlining, especially the logistics of perishables. Again, reducing costs, reducing emissions, but also reducing waste by using the data that we generate voluntarily or involuntarily by shopping online. Yeah.
One of the other questions I had for you, I imagine there's overlap in your research with other domains. So ambulance, placement optimization, first responder, stuff like that, where it's a similar problem. They're not delivering packages, they're delivering services, but they're having to deal with logistics. You know, what's the time of day? What's the potential demand, which is not demand that you and I like to think about, but it's risk, whether there's different events and things. Do you see overlap in your research where you see publications or researchers that do try to focus on these areas, or are they borrowing from your space when it comes to ambulance placement?
The domains are obviously very different, like ambulance services and last mile delivery of e-commerce packages have very little in common from a domain point of view, but from a methodology point of view, they're extremely close. Like actually, I even used this example in my lecture at MIT, because different approaches of thinking about routing or network design depend on what your objective is. Let's say if you distribute e-commerce shipments, then your objective is typically to minimize your average cost per delivery. While if you are figuring out where to put your ambulance, like your emergency response station in a city, your objective might be to place them in such a way that you minimize the risk of taking more than 15 minutes to get to any random location in the city with your ambulance. Obviously, you're still trying to minimize costs, but that's kind of the hard constraint. You want to be everywhere or anywhere you need to go within 15 minutes. But methodologically, these two problems, e-commerce distribution, network design, and routing, are extremely close to these other areas. And there is a lot of exchange between researchers that may work on different real-world applications, but use very closely related methods to solve them.
And one of the last questions I have for you is, are we to the point now where we are able to do midday route re-optimizations? Or do we just do route optimization at the beginning of the day when it comes to last mile delivery? Is anyone doing midday adjustments based on traffic or other things or real time?
I'm sure people are doing this. The challenge obviously is how do you get reliable real time data that you could actually use to make these re-optimizations? Another challenge is that actually, depending on how complex your route is, re-optimizing it might be quite computationally costly, so you can't do it within a second. And I would say it's still relatively rarely done in practice, simply because it's only really necessary to do this if you are predominantly carrying highly time-sensitive deliveries. So if it really matters whether you lose those 5 minutes in traffic or not. So think of delivery services that exclusively deal with extremely tight delivery time windows, like an express courier service or something. For them, that is really important to keep the intraday dynamics of traffic and weather and whatnot in check. For, let's say, the standard parcel delivery service of today, it's probably not that relevant yet. But as we were speaking before, since more and more people want things faster, more flexibly, more tied to their own availability, I think this becomes more relevant. Actually, I have an interesting connection here to a topic that we discussed before, namely drones. So one area of research that we are quite interested in right now is using drones to replenish delivery vehicles intraday. So imagine you have a delivery vehicle moving around the city, which usually starts leaving the depot at, I don't know, 8 a.m. or so. Basically, what that means is that any package that hasn't reached the depot before 8 a.m. in the morning won't get delivered that day. Now, you may, for various reasons, have latecomers or just parcels that are super urgent but haven't been placed until 8 a.m. yet. So they arrive at the depot at 10 or at noon or whenever, and you still want to get them out there. You still want to get them delivered, but you don't want to send an individual courier vehicle for a single package. So you might want to use a drone to pick up that package, fly to the delivery vehicle that's already en route since the morning, and basically replenish that vehicle with additional packages to deliver. And at that point, you obviously need the ability to dynamically re-optimize, because you're basically inserting new delivery stops into the route while the route is already being executed. And that's also futuristic, but not unlikely to happen.
That's really interesting. I've really enjoyed talking to you. This is fascinating. It's interesting because this is a problem that impacts everyone, literally everyone. Yeah. All of my neighbors, this impacts everyone.
But a lot of people don't realize that how difficult it is to get that package to their doorstep.
They don't appreciate it, but they do get mad when it's not there the next day when they said it was going to be. Well, this has been a pleasure. I really, really appreciate having you on and appreciate you giving us your time and your expertise.
Sure. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you for joining us on this More Intelligent Tomorrow journey. Discover more and join the conversation at moreintelligent.ai. The future is closer than we think.